Hello, and welcome to the Software Stories podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to software experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes, and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you, and enjoy the show.
Awesome. So we've got Edson Ferreira here. He's the head of engineering at Lloyds Banking Group. Thanks for coming on the show, Edson. Pleasure to have you.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, very much looking forward to this. Brand new start for you over at Lloyds Banking Group, only just taking on this kind of new role. So I'm very much looking forward to the chat because we caught you at, I suppose, such an exciting time.
Indeed it is. This is week three for me. In the bank, and it's very very rewarding experience to actually see that I have the opportunity to help the bank in the context of the people value stream, which is the area of the bank that I'm leading, the engineering capability, and yeah, hopefully be able to do a massive difference, similarly to what I did with Findle Education.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, what they did for that, I suppose, it opens the opportunity up to discuss like your kind of background as well. So, yeah, it's such an impressive role that you've been able to get started on here. So, yeah, we'll take a bit back down memory lane, if you would, and you know, talk us through some of the experiences that have, you know, I suppose, led you to this amazing point in your career where you are now.
Yeah, so I've landed in the UK back in 2004 when I finished my degree in Portugal, and at that point when I finished my degree, I thought, well, Portugal, it's a nice country to live, but not particularly big enough for a young, ambitious Edson Ferreira. So at that point, I thought, let's see what the world has to offer. So when I arrived in the UK back in 2004, it was more of a question of, right, I'm a software engineer straight out of uni. Let me do what I do best. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I got straight into software engineering role in the first 2 weeks of arriving. And at that point, I was able to work for a small subcontractor in the Bolton area, basically developing an information management system for their day-to-day operation. Mm-hmm. They were very much managing their projects using like Excel spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. And they, as a small subcontractor, they were doing like 1,000 kitchens for Bolton Council and 2,000 heating replacements for Rosendale Council, for argument's sake. And basically, they were managing all of this work streams with Excel spreadsheets, and it was really difficult to manage. So I was responsible for creating a management system that would enable them to basically have an information system that would allow them to schedule the work for the engineers, manage project status, and they're kind of like just run each individual project from configuration all the way to delivery and closure in terms of finances. And then from there, I jumped over the fence to still within the building services industry, to one of the biggest powerhouses on the building services industry software, a company called Amtech that now has been acquired by Trimble, £2 billion American giant as well. And I was responsible for software called NES, which is software to create building service specifications. I was there for about 7 years and gained a lot of knowledge around the building services industry, only to then, after 7 years, to jump to a completely different sector, to Reckitt Benckiser as a software engineer again. And then from Reckitt Benckiser, they decided to uplift the digital department from Manchester over to Warsaw. And that's when I had a chance to join Findle as head of web development initially, and then head of software engineering 1 year later. And in Findle, it was a really impressive journey in the sense that we started with only people, including myself, where we had the basically the Findl needed to create an e-commerce platform that was able kind of like to fix the problem that they were having with their existing e-commerce platform, which was stopping them from growing. It was a very clunky and off-the-shelf platform that was not fit for purpose. And at that point, they had 18% digital in terms of revenue. Only 18% came through the digital platform, exactly because of the fact that it was extremely slow and hard to evolve. And I was brought in to basically users. We all got made voluntarily redundant. So I pitched three of my colleagues there, and we started a project that in 7 months we released the first version of the e-commerce platform on AWS, so fully cloud-based and ready to run. And then from there, 7 months, we continued to build upon the e-commerce platform. As I left Findl a weeks ago, the e-commerce platform has enabled the business to now be at 70% of its digital revenue comes from the e-commerce platform. So a massive shift from a catalog-based business into a business that now primarily customers go through digital rather than the contact center. So I was really, really happy with that. That chance to make a massive difference to a business that in its own right, it's a market leader, just needed that digital transformation to enable it to actually reach even higher ground.
Amazing.
So,
yeah. And then that brings us to Lloyds Bank, where we are now, I suppose.
Yeah, that's correct. So basically, I was very privileged to be invited to join Lloyds at a time where the bank has a project basically of £3 billion to transform itself into the bank of the future. And I joined to help People Value Stream, which is a value stream that deals with payroll, that deals with recruitment, all the human capital management subject matters, to basically upskill the engineering community and to drive the digital transformation that HR within the bank actually needs. So I've been very, very fortunate to be transformation in the value stream, and ultimately transformation from a waterfall and a program based organization to an agile DevOps organization that that pumps features out very, very quickly and very effectively. So I'm really excited about this opportunity.
Oh, yeah, hugely so. There seems to have been a trend, you know, throughout your career where it's sort of, you know, you've built things purposefully. Like, you know, you had that kind of, clearly had that intuition about areas that needed to improve, and then you just seem to have, obviously, the technical ability to be able to kind of pull that off. It's like it's quite a fierce combination. Do you think that is a trait of an engineer now, or do you think that, if you're being modest, I suppose, that is something that perhaps can't be taught, to have that kind of clarity on what needs to be fixed from a commercial perspective?
So that's a really great question. I was quite fortunate, and perhaps accidentally, I was quite fortunate that my degree was business information systems. And my degree in Portugal had about 60% of the core economy and business management modules that you would find on a hardcore, like economics and business management degree, paired with 40% of hardcore software engineering. So it was kind of like a hybrid university degree, almost geared up for individuals that would then bridge the gap between the business and the engineering capability of the business. So somebody that can talk business to stakeholders, but at the same time have technical knowledge to then translate those projects and requirements into like actual stuff that gets delivered. So I was quite fortunate that was the degree that I did. And I think this enabled me to very easily navigate both circles in and out without necessarily feeling that I was kind of like an introvert engineer that just wanted to code and not necessarily to have any interaction with stakeholders, or kind of like the more less adventurous engineer that feels that perhaps I'm better suited as a project manager or as a business analyst because coding is not really for me. So it's been an interesting mixture that I'm not sure if here in the UK you guys actually have this kind of degree where couple both sciences together. But I think it's very beneficial for engineers to have a business mentality when it comes to software engineering, because ultimately software engineering in and of itself is not really valuable apart from having to be directed at solving a problem. I think this is where my degree and my experience throughout my career have actually enabled me to reach at a position where I'm head of software engineering, but I can still code. I still code on a weekly basis. I've got projects that I do at home where I keep myself very, very technical, and I've got the ability still to liaise at a stakeholder in a boardroom level without compromising on my technical skills at the same time.
You know, throughout your career, do you feel like you've always kind of had all the autonomy to kind of pursue ideas as well? Do you think that you've been enabled to that point to just pursue things that you perceive to be valuable? I mean, obviously, there's always kind of an innate direction, and you know, there's a reason why people are hiring you to pay you to do a job. But have you, do you feel that, you know, like for the most part for your career, you have had quite a lot of autonomy to just kind of pursue projects when and needed based on, you know, these kind of commercial instincts that you've had?
Yeah, I was very fortunate not to have like micromanagers. You're absolutely right. People that that basically were able to give me tasks and projects where I could be able to use my full potential and ultimately be able to do a job without necessarily being told what I need to do, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So I was quite fortunate in the companies that I've worked, and perhaps because the managers that I've worked with, they were people that understood that if you try to teach a developer or software engineer what to do, you might as well do his job for him. But being able to have people that understand that engineers need vision and direction at a higher level, then let them be. Give them the marching orders, but also let them have the ability to then decide how you're actually going to get there. So yeah, I was very, very fortunate with that.
You mentioned in a couple of things in the notes that you sent over previous to the recording, and one of them was around creating and maintaining high performance teams. Do you think that kind of autonomy is certainly a significant piece of that puzzle?
You're absolutely right. I think people that are empowered to do a job which they love naturally will be high performing. Mm. So if you look at some of the best elite snipers, nobody needs to tell them that they need to practice 8 hours or 10 hours or 12 hours a day. They will practice naturally because that's what they love to do. And because they have the freedom to choose how they're going to be using their natural intelligence and skills, they will naturally become high performer. So definitely you're absolutely right. It's absolutely paramount that from a management point of view and a leadership point of view, people actually feel empowered and are given the opportunity to prove themselves and to step up to where management and leadership wants them to be, and are given the space and the tools they need to be the very best that they can be.
Absolutely. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I think there's a big push for, like, well, I don't know if there's a big push, but perhaps there's certainly an emergence of bureaucracy, which is quite the extreme level of, you know, transparency and like self-organization. And I think like most things, like it's good to have, you know, I suppose an extreme example to make a point. Some people think it is quite literally the right direction. I've certainly had people on this podcast that believe in it. You know, and I think culturally it works quite well also. But is there still kind of a need for, you know, that kind of a little bit of structure and, you know, an element of leadership to organize people? You know, especially it makes me think about like junior people coming into a role. You know, do you think it still takes a certain kind of person who does thrive in a more autonomous environment? And you know, we talk about it very assumptively that this is a good thing, but you know, clearly not right for everyone, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that the the freedom to be able to become the very best version that an engineer can potentially be does not mean that you don't have that structure and that support that leadership needs to provide. So I'm a big fan of a leadership style, of a leadership style called situational leadership that basically allows leaders to understand where people are within within the level of development and skill set and competence towards a particular task or a particular job, a particular function. And then situational leadership then tells you that your leadership style should adapt in accordance to where they are. So I won't go into too much detail, but somebody that perhaps it's starting a new task. Perhaps his commitment is going to be high, but his level of competence is going to be low. So at that point, situational leadership advises that as a leader and as somebody that has the responsibility of serving that that particular individual, you should use more of a directional approach to this particular individual and the task that he has to do, in which you engage more of a one-way communication and you actually tell the person exactly what you want them to do so that the person can actually have a sense of direction rather than just being left on its own to figure out how to do this, because it has a very low level of competence at that point. But as the person kind of like starts to gain more competence and kind of like starts to hit the first bumps on the road of coming good in that particular function, then situational leadership says that you should adapt accordingly and start kind of like to have more of a supporting coaching role in which you engage more of in a two-way communication and you support the individual and you encourage the engineer to actually believe in himself and be a high performer. So situational leadership, contrary to other leadership styles where you almost like try to match the leadership style to the setting, it basically uses this this matrix of directing, coaching, supporting, and delegating to enable you to navigate the people that are under your command in a way that they feel supported, and not only supported, but the right level of support in order for them to actually become high performers.
Interesting. Really interesting. Where do you kind of get that sense that that was something that inspired you and you felt that this was, in your own opinion, clearly the ideal way of being a leader? Was it from personal experience? Was it something you read? Like, what was kind of spurred on this kind of concept of, situational leadership?
So when I joined Findo, I didn't have necessarily any management experience. And jumping in from a position of senior software engineer at Reckitt Bank Israel to Findo as head of web development, at that point, I myself was faced with the challenge of, like, I'm going into a leadership position and my leadership skills and my leadership knowledge is perhaps not to a level where I feel myself confident that I'm able to do like a very good job. And one of the things that I've always strived in my life is to be the very best that I can be. I've never looked at mediocrity or being average as something that I personally accept for myself or for anyone who works alongside me. I always look for high performance in anything that I do. And at that point, reading about leadership and trying to understand the different leadership styles that are available, it basically led me to choose the ones that I thought were more conducive to better results rather than necessarily sticking to what typically people would normally gravitate towards, which is more of a transactional leadership style where you reward good behavior and you punish bad behavior. And therefore you kind of like you lead by almost by this sense of reward. If you behave well and you perform well, you get a bonus. If you don't behave so well, then I'm afraid that you're not going to get a salary rise this year. So that's kind of like the default position that a lot of leaders tend to adapt. And I thought, surely there's going to be something better than that, because ultimately the quid pro quo can only go so far. And that's when I started looking into situational leadership and particularly servant leadership and transformational leadership as kind of like the three leadership styles that would be kind of like the basis to enable me in Findl to create a high-performing team in which I, as the head of software engineering, my role would be not to manage people for results, to actually create an environment that naturally be conducive to results. And it's a shift in the paradigm of actually cracking the whip and making people work harder to actually be there to support people, to listen to them and to motivate them and support them anywhere, any way they need in order for them to actually feel valued, to feel that they're part of something bigger than just their own role. And through that, you create a sense of community and naturally people become highly performant because they actually have a sense of belonging that otherwise they wouldn't.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I think we'll leave it here. I could continue to talk to you forever. I'll say best of luck in the new role. It's very exciting. I'm looking forward to staying in touch and just seeing how you progress. Congratulations on all the success, and thank you so much for stopping by today.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time. Thank you.